Hi, this is Steve Meyer, and I want to thank you for being a regular listener of the ID the Future podcast. We appreciate your interest in intelligent design and the work we're doing to develop the case for the theory of intelligent design. And I'd like to encourage you, if you find these broadcasts edifying, intellectually or otherwise, to become a regular financial supporter of the work of the Center for Science and Culture. You may know that we depend entirely on private donations. We don't get any federal money. We don't get government money for our scientific research program. And if you find the work that we're doing interesting, we'd be awfully grateful if you'd consider becoming a partner in that work by providing whatever you're able to ensure that that work goes forward.
Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast of the Center for Science and Culture. The following talk is by Casey Luskin, Research Director of the Center for Science and Culture. Casey will be discussing why the fossil evidence doesn't support the claim that humans evolved from ape-like precursors. This lecture was recorded at a recent Science and Human Origins conference. Here's Mr. Luskin.
Okay, so let's talk about this field of paleoanthropology. Paleoanthropology, of course, is the study of the hominid fossil record, and we're going to talk about why this field is fragmented. And the field of paleoanthropology is fragmented in multiple senses. And I think it's important to understand this because we need to realize that the evidence for human evolution is not necessarily quite as solid or consistent as a lot of times we're taught. This is a quote from Stephen Jay Gould, the famous paleontologist. He said, "Most hominid fossils, even though they serve as a basis for endless speculation and elaborate storytelling, are fragments of jaws and scraps of skulls." And this is really quite true. It's very rare to find a complete skeleton if you are a paleoanthropologist, or even if you have a partly complete skeleton, it's very rare to find key bones, like say a pelvis or a femur, found intact. So the fossils themselves are very fragmented. The record is also fragmented. This is a quote, I love this quote, it's from an article in the journal Science from a few years back, but I think it still holds true. It's titled, "The Politics of Paleoanthropology." And it says that the primary scientific evidence of this field is a pitifully small array of bones from which to construct man's evolutionary history. One anthropologist has compared the task to that of reconstructing the plot of War and Peace with 13 randomly selected pages. Conflicts tend to last longer because it is so difficult to find conclusive evidence to send a theory packing. So to give an idea of exactly what we're talking about here, I took the cover of the book War and Peace and broke it up into just 13 small little squares. So imagine trying to reconstruct the entire cover of this book from these squares. It's not going to happen. But this is sort of what paleoanthropologists are faced with when trying to reconstruct the supposed evolutionary record of human beings in the fossil record. They have a very fragmented fossil record. So the fossils themselves are very fragmented. Here's a quote from Richard Lewontin. I think this is another very helpful quote for understanding the fragmented nature of this field. He says, "When we consider the remote past before the origin of the actual species Homo sapiens, we are faced with a fragmentary and disconnected fossil record. Despite the excited and optimistic claims that have been made by some paleontologists, no fossil hominid species can be established as our direct ancestor." And again, this goes back to the fact that fossils are very few and far between in the hominid fossil record. They're just very rare. We don't have a lot of them. And what we do have is often just scraps, maybe some skull and some other scraps of bones. So the record itself is fragmented. The field of paleoanthropology is also fragmented in the sense that paleoanthropologists often disagree with one another. I love this quote. It's from a producer of a PBS special on Neanderthals a few years ago. And he said, "Each Neanderthal expert that he interviewed thought the last one I talked to was an idiot, if not an actual Neanderthal." You see this quite a bit in the field of paleoanthropology. They really like to kind of snipe at each other and take pot shots. And I think part of the reason for this is because the topic of human origins is a very emotional one. If you have a pet theory that's based upon just a few scraps of bones trying to explain how our own species arose, and somebody else disagrees with that theory, you might get a little bit emotional about it. And I think a lot of it has to do with, again, the sparse nature of the evidence and the very emotional nature of the topic of human origins. So this is understandable. We're not going to necessarily fault people for being very protective of their own ideas, but at the same time, it should give us a little bit of caution when we see people stridently promoting their little pet theory of how humans arose or which species is our ancestor and so forth. Approach it with a dose of healthy skepticism and know that it's not just calm, cool, perfectly collected scientific objectivity going on here. Listen to what they have to say, evaluate their arguments, but be skeptical and be cautious. And I think that's a good scientific mindset you should always have. So the field itself is also fragmented. So there's a number of ways in which the field of paleoanthropology is fragmented. This is a quote from a senior editor of the journal Nature, one of the top, if not the top, scientific journal in the world. He says that fossil evidence of human evolutionary history is fragmentary and open to various interpretations. And it's because of the fragmented nature of this field that I think there's a lot of room to have discussions and disagree. So if somebody tells you that if you don't believe that humans evolved from ape-like species, then you're some kind of, as Richard Dawkins said, you're ignorant or insane or wicked. I think that there's a lot of room for healthy disagreement here. And you should always have red flags going off when somebody comes to you in a very dogmatic tone and says, you have to believe it this way. This is the only way to believe. Because I think that the scientific evidence is not that clear, and really a good scientific mindset does not speak with a dogmatic tone. It speaks with skepticism. So be skeptical of what I'm saying today. Go check it out. Read the textbooks, read the papers for yourself, come to your own conclusions. This is my take on it, and I think it's backed by the peer-reviewed literature pretty well. Oh yes, one other quote here. This is a great quote from Donald Johanson. He says, about half the time span in the last 3 million years remains undocumented by any fossils. That's pretty striking, because that's the period when humans supposedly evolved. Now, I should qualify this. This quote is from 1996. There have been some fossils discovered since then, but I would say that even the fossils that have been found really do not shed much light on where humans arose and where we came from. But I find it amazing that when somebody like Ronald Wetherington, the Southern Methodist University professor, says that there are no gaps in the fossil record, and yet you have other people that express very different viewpoints. Okay, so let's talk about sort of this hyping that goes on when people try to promote their pet theories of human origins to the public. It's funny that the hype seems to correlate with the age of the fossil. The older the fossil is and the more fragmented it is, the more hype that we see. So this was a fossil that was discovered right around the turn of the millennium, around the year 2000. It's Aurorin tugensis, or they nicknamed it Millennium Man, and it supposedly is one of the oldest human ancestors. The New York Times said that this fossil may be the earliest human link, and it was said that this might have been sort of the dawn of the human lineage, but this is all that was found. It literally was a few scraps of bones. The most interesting one was part of a femur here, and based upon that, it was said that maybe this was an upright walking early progenitor of our genus Homo. Well, later on, scientists, they did their analyses, and I would say cooler heads prevailed. This is from a Yale University Press book published in 2007 that looked at this and said, you know what, all in all, there's really precious little evidence bearing on how Aurorin moved. Was it really this upright walking bipedal ape-like creature, or is it really just an interesting find that we have, but we don't have enough to go on to really say for sure exactly how this species walked? And they fell into the latter camp. They said, you know, really, we just don't have enough evidence here to know for sure how this species walked. Here's another fossil you might have heard of. This is from more recent memory. Who remembers hearing about Ardipithecus ramidus, or Ardi, that came out a few years ago? Anybody remember this fossil? It was all over the news. Okay, a couple hands went up. So this is some of the headlines we saw when Ardi was discovered. I think it was really pushed in the year 2009 from the Discovery Channel. It said that Ardi was the oldest human ancestor that was unveiled. Associated Press said the world's oldest human-linked skeleton was found. The journal Science called it the breakthrough of the year and also called it a human ancestor. So let's look at Ardi real quick. Can we really definitively say that this was an early precursor to human beings? They said again, we see this repeatedly, it was an upright walking or bipedal ape-like creature that was a precursor to human beings. In fact, Tim White, who's a paleoanthropology expert at UC Berkeley, and he was one of the lead scientists that studied Ardi, he called her the Rosetta Stone for understanding bipedalism. So is this really true? Can we really make strong conclusions about Ardi? Well, it turns out that when Ardi was first discovered, her bones were in absolute shambles. These are some quotes from some of the reports about the shape of Ardi's bones when they were first found. Some portions of Ardi's skeleton were found crushed nearly to smithereens and needed extensive digital reconstruction. So I'm a big Michael Jackson fan. He's got a lot of Michael on my playlist at work, so I have nothing against Michael, but I mean, we have to be skeptical when we hear people saying that they need a digital reconstruction. Well, shouldn't we be reconstructing a bone based upon what we find and not imagining it with a computer? So that initially, right off the bat, should throw up some red flags that maybe there's some interpretation going on into this fossil. Here are some other comments about the quality of Artie's bones when they were first discovered. The pelvis was said to have looked like an Irish stew. Now, the pelvis is one of the crucial bones when you want to understand whether a hominid walked upright or walked on four legs like a chimp or a gorilla, okay? So if the pelvis looked like an Irish stew, that does not inspire confidence in any kinds of claims you want to make about how this organism walked, because that is a crucial bone. We need to have a very precise and accurate reconstruction and measurements of that bone to understand how it walked. So to me, this is another major, major red flag. It was called roadkill. It said it was squished, it was chalky, it was distorted, it was crushed to smithereens, and I missed one quote that said that it would turn to dust with a touch. So again, that doesn't really inspire much confidence that we really know for sure how this organism walked. So eventually, of course, as seems to always happen, cooler heads prevailed. An article in the journal Science a couple years after Artie was discovered said that all of the Ardipithecus raminus bipedal characteristics cited also serve the mechanical requisites of quadrupedality. So that's a nice word to learn on a Saturday morning. That just means you walk on four legs. So really, all the bones also could be compatible with an organism that walked on four legs. An article in the journal Nature by Bernard Wood, another leading paleoanthropologist, he said, Artie, being a human ancestor is by no means the simplest or most parsimonious explanation. So we see this pattern consistently, and you guys have probably seen this in the media, that a fossil is discovered, it's promoted to the public heavily with these hyped up news stories saying, look, we found the latest human ancestor, and then a few years go by, and eventually, lo and behold, cooler and calmer heads prevail, and some articles come out in the scientific literature saying, you know what, this fossil really is not all it was cracked up to be, it's not a human ancestor, or we don't really know what it was, it's pretty ambiguous, we only have a few bones to go on. So we just see this pattern over and over again. So again, have a healthy dose of skepticism and sort of look at the long view. Don't just read the latest article you read and think this is the gospel truth. Wait and see what scientists have to say over time. This is a great quote from, speaking of over time, Time magazine quoted one scientist saying that the hype around Artie was overblown. And I think this is a good lesson to learn here.
This lecture was recorded at a Science and Human Origins conference in the fall of 2014. The conference featured John West, Casey Luskin, Ann Gager, and Rick Sternberg talking about the fossil, genetic, and social issues surrounding the debate over human origins. We will be featuring these speakers on future episodes of ID the Future. For more information, please visit idthefuture.com. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2014. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.